1, 2, 3.
You're listening to Sports Talk Chicago with your host, John Zagluhl.
John, I am fantastic. Thank you for having me. You got an awesome voice, man, and that was a terrific intro. You're like a pro's pro.
You know, that was the first time somebody ever said that, John. No, you're the first person to ever say anything like that. That's very interesting.
You got it, John. Anything for a fellow Chicago guy.
Well, what a great question.
That's a great question. Nobody's actually asked me that.
I like it. What a great question. I never heard that before.
Chase Utley is what? You're saying he's not a Hall of Fame candidate?
You know, it's funny. You may be the only person that I've heard make that connection.
Thank you, John, for having me. I'm doing great. By the way, you have an outstanding voice. Not sure about your face because I haven't met you, but your voice is great.
You're doing a much better job than I ever did. You've had some heavy hitters guests on too, man, so keep up the good work. But it's good to be with you, and I'm ready to talk sports.
Hello, everybody, and welcome in to Sports Talk Chicago. My name's John Zagluhl. Great to have you here. Today's edition of the program, the White Sox are playoff bound. We'll break it all down in just a moment, plus a brand new interview today with Brandy Mueller, the former NFL GM and 2000 NFL Executive of the Year. We'll talk with him about the Bears, their win over the Bengals, what it means for Justin Fields, and so much more. It's a great interview. You don't want to miss it. Comes up near the midway point of this show. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluhl. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Before we start today, I have to tell you about State Farm agent Brian McDevitt. A lot of our listeners have gone to him for all their insurance needs. He's been very helpful in getting them the coverage they deserve. There's no game with Brian. He's just here to help and make sure you feel safe. So if you have insurance needs and you haven't called him yet, what are you waiting for? Dial up the number, 630-796-2662. That's 630-796-2662. Or find him online at brianismyagent.com. That's brianismyagent.com. And make sure to mention Sports Talk Chicago. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. I want to start today with this. And the Tony La Russa critics, please stand up. Raise your hand. I want to read you some of the headlines that were written when Tony La Russa was hired. Quote, the White Sox hired Tony La Russa for all the wrong reasons. Hiring Tony La Russa is a new level of condescension by Jerry Reinsdorf. MLB fans crushed the White Sox for hiring Tony La Russa. So it sounds like the Tony La Russa hiring is already not going great. Please don't hire Tony La Russa. That was before he was hired. Where is everybody today? Where are these critics? That's right, they've gone away to their cave. Because the fact of the matter is, Tony La Russa was a great hire for this team, and as of today, the White Sox are in the playoffs. First time since 2008 they've made it under a regular format. I know you could say it's all about the players. We'll get to that. We'll get to why they're actually there. Tony La Russa plays a small part, but there were people claiming La Russa would tank this team. La Russa would be the issue. He would be the fault for them not making it, for them losing 80 games. Didn't happen. The day La Russa was hired, made a video saying, great hire, and I got crapped on. Not a surprise. But I ask again, where are those people today? Oh, that's right. They're celebrating the Sox getting in and lambasting the Cubs for being a bad team. That's what Sox fans do. All of you forgot about Tony La Russa, about the hiring, about the controversy surrounding it. I did. Got the receipts right here. These are real articles written by real people talking about the problem with this. And it's a horrible idea. Disrupts chemistry. He's a dinosaur. He doesn't know anything. Well, knows how to win baseball games. Knows how to win a division. Knows how to manage a team. Knows how to win a World Series, couple of them. And oh yeah, he's good enough to be in the Hall of Fame. But no. Bad manager, horrible choice. And that's why the Sox won't succeed. Gotta love this narrative. This was made by mainstream media. Everybody said bad manager. Didn't happen. I'm here to do my victory lap. All of you came after me. All of you said a horrible idea. Fact of the matter is, it worked. Now the playoffs are still to come. We'll talk about what that means, but for the moment, it worked. Tony La Russa actually got the job done. People claimed the most outrageous things about this team. They said this team would collapse because of the manager. Didn't happen. Sox needed a leader. Rick Renteria, a good manager, good guy, not a leader. No. No experience, no playoffs. He is literally a developmental manager. That's it. That's all he is. Nothing wrong with that, but he's not equipped to handle a World Series caliber team. La Russa is. And to his credit, he's gotten the job done this year so far. He's managed some good talent. Made some tough decisions. And so far, he's found ways to win. I will say this. The Sox have cooled off in the second half. That's not an understatement. They've been 27-27. That's concerning, for sure. They faced better teams, and they haven't performed all the time. Here's what I do know, though. Come a five-game or seven-game series, when everybody's healthy, everybody's ready, you put out your best guys ready to succeed, I do believe they're a World Series caliber team. They could be in the World Series this year. They can. Have the talent, have the manpower, have the depth on the bench to get the job done. But look at this lineup. It's just so impressive. It really is. I mean, it's so impressive. Yasmani Grandal came back from an injury, sitting above 340 since coming back. A 949 OPS in 82 games. Jose Abreu's killing it. 113 RBIs, 29 homers. His average was better, could be building in MVP games. Tim Anderson, Yoan Moncada, they're doing great. Luis Robert still hitting 350. Aloy's down to 251, but still an OPS plus above 100. And these are guys who no one really expected some of them to do well. Some of them were hurt. There were questions. All of them, for the most part, are performing. There are two disappointments for the Sox right now, two big ones. Cesar Hernandez is hitting 218 since he was acquired. He had 20 homers when they got him. He's had three since. He's been the starting second baseman. That might change for the playoffs, just saying. And Craig Kimbrel. Cubs won that trade by a mile. Not even close. They get Nick Madrigal, who's young, under team control, could hit 300. And Craig Kimbrel has a 5.68 ERA since joining the South Side. I don't know how to explain that. You know, the change of scenery could have been a problem. Being on a new team, being in a different role, having to switch off closing roles with Liam Hendricks could have been a problem. But to me, there's no excuse for a 5.7 ERA. No excuse. When the team, too, that got you, traded away a good prospect, good player. Actually gave up a decent, hefty price to get Kimbrel. Didn't work at all. Maybe it's the Cubs getting back of the White Sox for the Jose Quintana trade, but seriously, that's not good. Craig Kimbrel should be better. When you look at his numbers on the season, they look great, 2.26 ERA, but his ERA was 0.49 before he came to the White Sox. Going up by two runs. And it's just a pattern for Kimbrel. It was 5 in 2020. It was 6.5 in 2019. And even in 2018 with the Red Sox, he had some issues. ERA ballooned to 2.74. It was 1.43 the year before. I've always rooted for Kimbrel. Always thought he was a good player. But this, I've seen enough. I've really seen enough. I mean, this is horrible. This is horrible. You give up a good player, Nick Madrigal. This is what you get in return. The Sox lost this trade. You know what? I don't even care about the trade part. Let's even put that out the window. I'm talking about from a playoff perspective, you need bullpen help. You acquired somebody to bolster your bullpen, they can't produce. That's a problem. That's a big problem. And they have guys doing okay. Tapera was doing fine, then he got hurt. Jose Ruiz is doing well. I mean, Kopech, Bummer, Crochet, they're all fine. I mean, the core of the bullpen's okay. It would have been nice to have Craig Kimbrel. Could be a Hall of Fame closer. Could be. Would have been nice to have him actually be good, pitch well, not throw a 5 ERA and blow games. But it's happened. 12 earned runs in 19 innings. It's not going to cut it. It's a shame. Same with Dallas Keuchel, too, by the way. Sox right now are debating who they're going to put in their rotation for the ALDS. My suggestion is keep out Keuchel. Get him the hell away from starting the game, from even pitching. That's not a personal attack on Keuchel. You can't be throwing a guy with a 5 ERA. You just can't be doing that. Lance Lynn and Carlos Rodon were Cy Young Award candidates. They're still pitching well. Lucas Giolito, 370 ERA. And yes, Dylan Cease, the youngster, former Cub, has earned the right to get a start. That's just how it goes. Oh, but Keuchel has seniority. He's been to a World Series. I don't care. That was 5 years ago. We're talking about today, who are the best four pitchers in the White Sox rotation? Keuchel doesn't make the cut. Doesn't even come close. Should be Lynn, Giolito, Rodon, Cease. Top four, done. That's it. Well, Rodon is hurt. That's an issue, but he's supposed to come back. If he's healthy, that's who you pitch. It's been a major disappointment. Here's the one positive, though. When I read you off this list of disappointing players, what, can I name three, four? Everybody else, for the most part, has performed to their potential. And a lot of guys have exceeded it. Tim Anderson still hitting 300. Jose Abreu continues to perform. Yasmani Grandal has been probably the biggest surprise for this team. And their rotation, to me, is still one of the tops in baseball. It's not anybody else's fault that the ERAs in baseball are high this year. Lucas Giolito's top 10 in baseball in ERA. It's at 3.7. I'll take it. Lance Lynn and Rodon, they were up there, but now they don't qualify. But still, I'll take that. I'll take 2.47 ERAs from both of them. That's rare. In this year, very rare. And as you all know, when it comes to baseball, when it comes to the playoffs, pitching wins over everything, pitching and defense. And I know it's an old cliche, but look back to history. 1997. Indians didn't win. Great team. Albert Bell, Jim Thome, Kenny Lofton. I mean, that lineup was stacked. Stacked lineup. Didn't win. Marlins won. Marlins had good enough pitching. Marlins won again in 2003. Good pitching. Josh Beckett, AJ Burnett. It worked. High-powered offenses don't work in the postseason. You need arms. You need pitchers to go 5, 6, 7 innings a start. Now, it's been different recently. Pitchers have gone 4, 3, and you give it to the bullpen. But in this case, for the White Sox, they have pitchers capable of going deep in games. That's huge. Huge. Their rotation's one of the best in baseball. I'll still maintain that. And if you get Keuchel out of the mix, you start those four, I think you're going to be okay. I do. Bullpen might be a bit iffy. Craig Kimbrel should not be on the postseason roster. That's just me. And yes, the offense could be back and forth. But you have a core of offensive guys who you know are going to perform. Moncada, Anderson, Rendon, Luis Robert, Jose Abreu. That's your core. That's it. When you break down the White Sox and take a look in depth at who produces the most for them, it's those guys. When you look at their rotation, they have a four-man rotation that's solid, very solid. Your number four starter as an ERA of 4.09, you're doing something right. Never mind the small, rough spots for this team. The Kimbrel thing, Keuchel, I get it. Right field. The positives for this team, the depth they have, the core of their offense, and the core of their starting pitching outweighs any potential negatives. The Kimbrel thing is a microcosm. It's so small compared to the fact they have four capable starting pitchers. And they have five or six guys in the lineup who you know and can count on to produce. Same with Keuchel. Keuchel is not one of those four starting pitchers. That's okay. Doesn't need to be. Had the opportunity, couldn't perform. That's no one else's fault but his. Move on. You're competing for a World Series championship here. There's no patronizing. There's no, well, Keuchel's older, we got to give him a start. No. If you're dead set on a World Series championship, guess what? You have the pieces to do it. You do. The question is, can they execute, and will they be played correctly? This is Tony La Russa's biggest and tallest task. He's done a great job so far. I don't care what anybody says. If he wins a World Series with this roster, that's all you need to know. That'll come after those people again who said, bad hiring, bad for the White Sox, going to drive them into the ground. It didn't happen. It didn't happen that way. You might have wanted it to happen, but it didn't happen, unfortunately for you. I can't wait to see this team play. I'm very excited. They got some pieces. They have some really good players, quality players who I want to see in a postseason environment, selfishly. I want to see how they do, and I want to see where they could grow come next year. Remember, everybody keeps forgetting this is not a one-shot opportunity here. Sox are going to be good for 5 to 7 years. Everybody's under contract. So the question is, if they don't do anything this year, what could they improve upon? What could be made better for next year? Number 5, starter. Bullpen piece, right field. Fine. I want to see these young guys in a legitimate postseason environment. Not like last year. Last year, because of COVID, 16 teams made it. That was a joke. This is real. This is real postseason baseball. I want to see what they're capable of. I want to see Tony La Russa manage this roster. I want to see execution and performance. Second half has been rocky. No question about it. It wasn't what the first half was. The first half, for the most part, was dominant. And they started 8-9, but then it turned into dominance pretty quick. Second half has been up and down. Ebbs and flows. They need to catch heat at the right time. They have a week and a half here left. They have to catch heat and get going. Look, they're 20 games over 500. They don't have the best record in the American League, but it doesn't matter. The division is weak. They're going to win it. That's fine. They don't need to be dominant. Show everybody that they're the best team yet. They just need to be ready. They need to be conserved. In a 7-game series, if you go 162, or if you go 101-61, it won't make a difference. 2008, Cubs and Angels. Two teams with the best records in baseball bounced in round one. Angels won 162, bounced. Cubs 197, bounced. Done. Record means nothing in a 5-game or 7-game winner-take-all series. So for those of you griping about the record, griping about, oh, they should be 90-60, Pythagorean win-loss, it doesn't make a difference. They weren't going to get home field anyway. They weren't. Rays are great. They're going to get it. Fine. Who cares? That doesn't mean they're a bad baseball team. That doesn't mean that they haven't executed or haven't lived up to their potential. They're going to be fine. I really do believe it. Can't argue with their rotation. Four guys ready to go. Kick out Keuchel. Sorry, but kick him out. That's not personal. It's just a fact. Not going to throw a guy with a 5 ERA just because he's a veteran when Dylan Cease is killing it or doing better. And you have your core of offensive superstars. Moncada, Anderson, Grandal, Robert Abreu. Those are your guys. That's what excites me about this team. They have a core. They have an identity. They know who they could lean on in the rotation and who they could lean on in the lineup to win. How many teams have that? They don't. How many teams have five guys or six guys they know? Okay, we're counting on you to perform. How many teams have four capable starters in their rotation? I mean, look at the Cubs this year. Cubs thought they'd be a great team. They had Jake Arrieta as a starter, whose ERA now is at 8. Teams could try and convince you that they have good starting pitching, but the fact of the matter is, unless you see performance, they don't. Sox have seen performance. They do. They have one bad apple. The rest of the four, solid. Solid as could be. That's how they're going to win. Rotation's going to be huge. When you have run producers in your lineup, you're going to be okay. This team is a World Series team today. The question is, can they execute? Will the moment be too big? Can Tony La Russa manage them correctly in a 7-game series? Only one way to find all that out. Got to play. Got to play. Got to see what you can do. I'm excited. Can't wait to see their growth. But nothing's given. They are a World Series team. No question. They have what it takes. They have the talent. But can they come through when it matters most? Can they beat a team above 500? Only time will tell. But I'm very excited about this White Sox team. If I were you, I'd make sure you tune in. More to come here on Sports Talk Chicago. My interview with Randy Mueller comes up next, so stay tuned. Talk Chicago. Everett John Zaglula, and we are back and ready for today's special guest. He's the CEO of MuellerFootball.com, host of the Football GM podcast, and the 2000 NFL Executive of the Year. Please welcome Randy Mueller to the program. Randy, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I'm doing great, John. Thanks for having me on. Always good to talk a little ball with you.
Randy, what was your reaction to the Bears' win on Sunday?
I think the Bengals were the right tonic for the Bears. I think we've all said all along that the Bears have a good defense. They just need to play better. And they did that. And really, that's the crux of the message coming out in my mind. I was able to see the game on tape. So I got to look at it a little more precisely than some. But I thought it was a good effort. Obviously, defensively, they made some plays. And that's what really counts at the end of the day.
How do you evaluate Justin Fields' performance in the game?
I thought it was okay. I think everybody knows there's going to be a learning curve with Justin. So, you know, to think he's going to pick up reads, to not miss some throws, to play a perfect game, it's just not going to happen. But the more of the experience that he can get, the better he can get that out of his system. We see what's going on with the Jets and Zach Wilson. We see what's going on with Trevor Lawrence in Jacksonville. These guys need to fail forward fast, if that makes any sense. And that's one advantage to playing, is you can get that out of your system. You can, sometimes it's trial and error, right? But you got to take the bad with the good. And I think Bears fans saw a little bit of both in Justin on Sunday.
Did the 28 passer rating concern you? Was that an issue to you?
Not really. I mean, there's a guy that didn't take first team reps all week long. I think it's a little different when you can prepare knowing you're the starter. Sure, he hit some throws, but he also made some throws too. And he made a couple throws that I'm not sure Andy can make. In fact, I know he can't. And we all know athletically what he can do. So I think all in all, it's not about the numbers. I don't think people are going to be able to judge Justin Fields with numbers on paper at all, because I don't think that serves him. You know, I think it's really an injustice. So I think you'll know, people will know, fans will know when that time is. I guess that's up to Matt Nagy.
Based on Sunday, do you think he's ready to start permanently?
Well, I've said all along that he's in a tough spot, right? He's ready to start. You can play him, but there's going to be some rough patches. And I've also said that that's what Matt really doesn't want. And that's what he's trying to avoid. It's a tough spot. I mean, he's in a different agenda than really the organization, because he's trying to coach for his future. And so he's got to do what's right to win games right now. He can't really absorb a 6 or 8, you know, game learning curve and lose 4 or 5 of those games, which teams are going to do with a rookie quarterback. That's just a given. So puts him in a tough spot. I'd have no problem playing the kid, but you got to know that it's going to be a Mr. Toad's wild ride. I mean, it may be around any corner a disaster, and then he'll make a wow play that'll make you know, your hope be genuine. And hope is what fans want to see. And a quarterback like him gives you hope, that's for sure.
What do you think of the interception late in the Bengals game? That turned things over, got things a bit close. The Bears still won, but I mean, that's a rookie mistake, right? Nothing to be concerned about.
Oh, I'm concerned about it. There's no question about it. But I'm also concerned about why we're throwing the ball in the last 2 or 3 minutes as well. So, you know, that figures in. I don't blame completely the players for everything. I think the scheme has to be looked at. I think at some point, the offensive scheme in Chicago is going to have to be expanded. I don't care who the quarterback is. It seems like we've had the same conversation for 2 or 3 years now. At some point, you're going to have to spread the field and throw the ball around. You're not going to be able to win holding all your cards close to your vest and hoping your defense scores a couple touchdowns for you. That's just not the NFL nowadays. So at some point, we're going to have to see some approach where we can attack the whole field. That's the one thing Justin can do, is he can attack the whole field at all levels. So we'll see. It just, you know, matter of when they, you know, throw him in there for real.
Why do you think that's been the case for the Bears? Has it been a quarterback problem, or is Matt Nagy more so to blame for never really expanding the playbook or expanding the ball downfield?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know the intricacies of the system, but from what I see on film, it's been the same with every quarterback. I don't think the quarterbacks mattered. I mean, all the way back to, you know, the last, I guess he was Trubisky. We were going to set the offense around him. And when you do that, when you set the offense around a quarterback that's limited, it's like playing with one arm behind your back. The defenses are good. They're really good. And you can't attack them. You know, it's like going to battle with a, you know, BB gun and everybody else has high powered rifles. You can't do that. And so really, I understand the plan, but I'm not sure at the end of the day that's good enough. I think what it comes down to is, in the long run for Bears fans, is it, do you trust Matt Nagy with the career of Justin Fields? That's really what it comes down to.
Do you trust Matt Nagy with Fields? You yourself?
I haven't seen evidence to where I think Justin Fields, you know, is going to go to the next level. I want to see something on offense that he can take to the next level. I want to see some things develop that he can get good at. Right now, we're calling plays. Certain ones work for him, certain ones work for the other guy. You know, I don't see the flow of a system in place. I just see a bunch of plays being called, and whether that's the quarterback limits those plays, I don't know. The offensive line, as you know, is shaky as heck. That's not a good setup either. So they've got some hurdles to overcome. I don't think the offense is to NFL standards yet for what all those reasons.
Randy Mueller here on Sports Talk Chicago. Randy, are you concerned about the Bears having not enough talent around Fields? Like Fields being a good quarterback, yes, but not having enough guys around him to shoulder the burden.
100%. That's been my struggle with it all along. I mean, we've seen what happened to the offensive line. We just mentioned it. I don't know that there's enough receivers to go around. I mean, yeah, there's a couple okay backs. We paid Jimmy Graham, what, $8, $9 million, and I don't think he's anywhere near what he was 4 or 5 years ago. So I think there's been hits that just haven't happened in the last year. I think it's been over the last 3 or 4 years. Some guys have got out the door that have gone elsewhere and developed. But yeah, I'm always concerned about the surrounding cast, especially for a young quarterback. I don't think it's fair to have him go out there and have it all on his shoulders. That's for sure. And that's going to be a hard battle for them to overcome. I understand the defense is good, but I don't know that can carry this team in 2021 in the NFL.
How important is that for a rookie quarterback? I mean, we're not seeing it just with Fields. We're seeing it with Lawrence, Zach Wilson, too. These are guys who were talented but really have nothing around them, and the numbers are showing.
Yeah, it's an organizational failure or success when a quarterback can progress or not. And I agree with you. It starts with the GM. It starts with the players around him. It starts with the coach and the schemes. I mean, hey, we saw Sam Darnold struggle forever in New York. Guess what? He's pretty good, right? I mean, he played pretty good for the Carolina Panthers the last 2 weeks. So coaching matters as well. So it's a convoluted story for these quarterbacks to succeed, but a lot of things got to come together. But it starts with the talent that you put around him, for sure.
Let me ask you this. Did you like the reduced package for Fields? Do you like that concept from Nagy?
No, I don't. I don't like the reduced concept for Mitch Trubisky either, because I think, again, it limits what you can do. The other teams are good. Defenses are good. They're going to figure out a reduced package. That's just the way it is. I don't think you can be successful over the long haul playing with a reduced package of any kind. I know how defensive coaches are, and it's going to get worse in the second half of the season, because that's when coaching really matters. And especially on defense, they have film, they have tendencies, they have trends, they have all the information that they need to put together game plans to stop you. So I just think it's hard to do anything with a limited skill set. And if we're trying to protect people, I think that's the wrong attitude to go in with. It just, I mean, maybe we're in survival mode in week 2, but that's going to be a long season if you are.
So the argument is, well, we want to get Justin Fields' feet wet. We don't want to put him in too quickly. We'll get him better over a couple of weeks. What do you say to that?
You gotta let him sink or swim at this point. You got to get him ready. These guys are going to come out of it. The Zach Wilsons, the Trevor Lawrences are going to be way better in week 10, week 8 than they are right now. And guess what? They're going to be way better next year having played these games this year. It's just the part of developing a quarterback that you got to be able to take the bad with the good. I don't know how you get better if you don't play, because I know you can't get better in practice. I don't think you can get better in preseason. I just think the speed of the game is so different in the regular season that the only way you can train a quarterback is to get him to play. And, you know, there's no substitute for real live action.
When do you think it's right to judge Fields based on his performance? Do you think he needs a full year, a couple of years?
I think he needs a couple of years for sure. I mean, I think, Was it fair to judge Sam Darnold?
Not
that
really.
That was 3 years, right? Yeah, it was 3 years. So I don't know. I think every situation presents different evidence, right? And so we'll see going forward. If I think you've got to be progressing as a quarterback. You can't make the same mistakes over and over again. That's hard to stomach and hard to see development when that happens. But I think the scheme has to meld with the skill set in order for that quarterback to get better and progress. Time will tell. We just don't have enough body work yet. The skill set that we evaluated Justin Fields on in college is there. I think there's enough to judge that still and say, yep, what we saw is probably there. But going forward, there's so much up in the air about the scheme and the way the people are around him, the opponents, the packages, the matchups. Time will tell.
If Andy Dalton's healthy, should he start next week?
I mean, I don't know. I guess if he doesn't start, what was the reasoning for starting him the first 2 weeks? You know, and I'm not saying I agree with it. I'm just saying that was the rationale, right? The rationale should not have changed. They won a game. So he can't change I don't think you can change the rationale now by just, you know, Justin Fields getting 42 plays or whatever he got. So I assume he's going to start, if he's healthy. And again, we can dispute whether that's the right or wrong decision, but common sense says he's going to start.
What if he isn't healthy? What if he misses 4 games? Fields comes in, does okay. Should the Bears transfer back to Dalton, or at this point, if that's the case, just leave Fields in and let him ride it out?
Well, I think you got to figure out what your record is after those 4 games. And we're, you know, surmising and kind of guessing as to what might happen. That's always a slippery slope. But I would think if they have mild success when he's in there, there'd be no reason to pull him out. In my opinion, I'd let him play and see how it shakes out. You've got a rest of the season to give you the rest of your team hope and to maybe figure out what you might be able to do better with him at the helm. So there's a lot to be learned if he plays, without a doubt. I don't know that there is a lot to be learned if he doesn't play.
What could this do to the Bears' season? Are you expecting better results now, or is your preseason prediction the same with Fields coming in?
I don't see a big difference, to be honest with you, because I haven't seen the system that supports whoever the quarterback is. So if I saw a system that spread the ball all over and reminded me of the 2000 Rams, then I'd be, you know, saying, hey, we got our ducks lined up. Let's find the right quarterback. But I haven't seen that yet. Plus the talent around him isn't going to improve. It's only going to get, you know, shredded with injuries over the next, you know, 17 weeks, so to speak. So I don't know that you can find the answers to that. I just think time will tell, and nobody wants to hear that as an answer for sure. But, you know, it's hard to crystal ball where we are going to be in a month from now. I assume that Justin Fields is going to play as much as he can. That's the only thing that makes sense for the organization going forward. I know that. But I can surely appreciate that may not make the most sense for Matt.
What does make the most sense for Matt Nagy?
Winning games.
And
I think Justin gives you a better chance to win games. I just think he offers so many more things. One, athletically, two, the arm talent that Andy doesn't have. Yeah, he doesn't have the experience. I get that. But I don't think this kid's going to fail. I think they're going to find a way to get it, you know, out of his hands at the right time. They just need to let it go at some point, and he's going to have to figure it out. He can't figure it out in the classroom on the chalkboard. I know that. So he's going to have to see it, react to it, get hit a couple more times like he did in preseason, hopefully not get hurt, and come back from it.
Randy, I'm curious, how do you go about developing a franchise QB?
Well, I think it depends on your roster. That's the biggest thing. And again, I've not drafted one in the top 10 like these guys have. So I'm probably not qualified to answer that. I've been around some good quarterbacks. I've drafted a couple of them. I've signed them off the street. I mean, I had Warren Moon in Seattle. We had John Kitten, who was an undrafted free agent. So those guys, you know, were handled completely different. John Kitten was one we sat on the practice squad all year long. And he became a starter in the league for 10 years, but he didn't take a snap. He was on scholarship the whole first year. If there's any way you can do that, great. But he was playing behind a Warren Moon, playing behind a proven commodity. That's the best way to develop a quarterback is when you don't have to, if that makes any sense. It's when you have to and have to play him that you have problems. So it's like Jordan Love in Green Bay. The best way to develop him is, you know, draft him and sit him for a couple of years, and maybe he'll have that. But you know, time will tell if that works out as well. I just think it's an organizational, you know, decision to draft one, in my opinion. And then you've got to fill in all the parts around him to give him a chance to develop. I keep going back to Sam Darnold, but he didn't have all the parts around him. He had a questionable scheme. The coaching obviously wasn't what he's getting now, so it's different. And he had no, you know, playmakers. He's throwing to neighbor kids half the time he was there, right? The receivers just weren't there. So, you know, it's a total organizational decision. And not only that, it plays out at the hands of everybody that's a decision maker in the organization.
How do you determine as a GM if a quarterback worked or didn't?
I think you've got to be honest. And to be honest, you're going to have to get, you know, two and a half years of starts. I mean, the Giants are still trying to figure it out, right? And they're in year three with Daniel Jones. So whose fault is that? Has he, you know, improved? I don't know. I mean, again, I think you see a skill set that allows you to either pick them or not when they come out. And then it's up to your staff to develop them. And if you don't see signs after 2 or 3 years, probably sooner than that, that they're getting better, you're better off cutting the cord and moving on.
Your experience, who was more to blame for a guy not working out, the player himself or the coaching?
I think sometimes players get drafted out of need and get drafted sooner than they should have. That's not the player's fault. We had Rick Meyer in Seattle. So I stand corrected. We drafted Rick Meyer. I wasn't in charge at the time, but we drafted him with the second pick in the first round. It wasn't his fault that it didn't work out there. We traded him to Chicago, as you know, and it didn't work out there either. So there's a skill set that was probably misevaluated coming out. So there's blame to go around, and it depends on the individual person and player. But, you know, I think some do it better than others, that's for sure.
Who's the best quarterback you developed?
Oh, I think John Kitten was from where he came from. I'll be honest with you. And that's not a household name for some, but he threw for a lot of yards. I was in Seattle when Dave Craig did the same thing, and Dave Craig's in top 10 in all time numbers for a quarterback. He was another undrafted college free agent. These guys went the route of Tony Romo, right? That, you know, nobody picked them. They had a chance to learn and sit and do better. And these guys all have a knack, though. When the lights are brightest, they do the best. I don't think you can judge a quarterback by anything he does in practice, other than if he keeps screwing up the organizational or the administrative part of it. Once you get the administrative part of it down, it's about shining when the lights are brightest. And these guys, you learn early on that, hey, this guy's got something special about him. When the lights are bright, he does not shy away from it. And those quarterbacks I named all had that.
Is that common today to find an undrafted guy and have him kind of blossom into this veteran? We don't see that too much today.
You know, I don't think we see it because there's not a platform to do it. You know, we sent John Kitten to the World League and he played there for a couple of years. Kurt Warner went to the World League. Hall of Fame went. Jake DeLome, another guy, went to the World League. See, we had the XFL, we had the AAF. Those don't exist anymore. I said for many years that the best thing we can do for our game is to develop quarterbacks. And that's what these other leagues did. They gave guys a chance to go play and learn the system and get reps at game speed. We don't have that now. So I think it's really hard for a player to come out of college to get the reps to develop. I think if this third league would ever come around again, whatever it is, I think that's good for the game. I think quarterbacks can then get an opportunity to play. PJ Walker was a quarterback in the XFL. Now he's the backup in Carolina. He's the only one that really came out of that league, but if that league were to exist for 2 or 3 years, you'd get some guys that will go on to play quarterback in the NFL, no doubt about it.
How about the worst quarterback you've developed? Who would that be?
Well, I don't know about worst quarterbacks. I mean, we've all had our share of swings and misses, that's for sure. And again, it's not up to the individual players, that's for sure, a lot of times. Some teams are bad, right? And we had a couple in Seattle where guys never had a chance. We drafted Dan McGuire in the first round from San Diego State. We traded the Phoenix Cardinals for Kelly Stauffer, gave a first-round pick for him. Those guys didn't work out, but it wasn't necessarily all on them. We were a bad team. We didn't have the right surrounding cast. So it's hard to blame a particular person. I blame the evaluators more than anything else for mis-evaluating what we were getting in a skill set and not being able to develop it once you got it.
Randy, before we finish up today, last question. The best moment from the Football GM podcast has been what?
The best what?
Best moment.
Oh, I don't know. I enjoy telling the stories from old times, whether it was a Nick Saban story or a Mike Holmgren chew my butt story or something like that. If you're around as long as I have, you're bound to have your butt chewed here or there. And I enjoy telling those stories. I know the listeners like that for whatever reason, and that's been good. But Mike Sando is my co-host on the Athletic podcast, and he does the heavy lifting. I'm just along for the ride. So I credit Mike for kind of getting this off and growing. And we're into season 2 now, and it's a lot of fun. It really keeps me engaged watching film and being involved in the game. And I really enjoy the give and take with Mike for sure.
Wait, can we hear one of those stories before we finish up? Funniest one, well, or craziest one?
I don't know if they're crazy, but obviously I spent 2 years in Miami with Nick Saban, right? And so I was the GM when he was the head coach. So I told Mike this the other day off the air. People don't know, my first year with Nick Saban, I lost 25 pounds.
And really?
And it was just because of the way we did our work and the way we grinded now. And this came up in talking about Urban Meyer in Jacksonville when he said, oh, I work harder than everybody else. Well, everybody works hard, but we really worked hard with Nick. And he made us all way better. And what they say, if it doesn't kill you, it'll make you better. So I remember my agent seeing him about halfway through that first season with Nick. And I walked into the restaurant to have lunch with him, and he didn't recognize me. He said, whoa, where's Randy at? You know, there's half of him right there. But, and Nick and I laugh about it too. It just comes with the territory of the NFL. You know, it is a grind and literally can take a toll on you physically. And it did with me that first year with Nick in Miami.
Well, Randy, thank you so much for joining me. Always appreciate the time. Best wishes moving forward with the podcast, and I'm sure we'll catch up again very soon. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thank you.
Great talk there with Randy Mueller. That'll do it for us today here on Sports Talk Chicago. Big thank you to Randy Mueller himself, Matt Dubiel, WCKG, Jim DeTalbin, Tomorrow Entertainment for making this show a success. Remember, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at John Z Sports and on Facebook at John Zagluo. And if you want to listen to this show at any time in podcast form, search up Sports Talk Chicago on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, and SportsTalkChicago.com. Another great show comes to you tomorrow. Thank you so much for listening. Till then, stay safe, and so long, everyone.
No! No! Here are the turtles!